Hi, this is DJ Detour, and you are listening to my show, Behind the Bit, where I'm going to teach you everything you never needed to know about horses, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So for my first segment, Horse Sense, I'm going to talk about markings, basic colors, and I'm going to go a little bit into color genetics. So for facial markings, there is a blaze, which is a wide white strip down the middle of the horse's face. There is a strip, which is a narrow white strip down the middle of the horse's face. A bald face, which is a very wide blaze that extends to or past the point of their eye, and horses that have bald faces also have blue eyes. A star, which is a marking between or above the eyes, which does not necessarily mean that it's in the shape of a star. That's just what we call it. There is also a snip, which is a white mark on the muzzle between a horse's nostrils. And there's also something called a badger face, which is a little bit more rare. I've never actually seen one in person, but I would love to. A badger face is when it looks like a reverse blaze. There's a dark strip down the middle of their face, and there's white around their face, so they look like a badger. And for all of these facial markings, they're not set markings, so all of them are going to be a little bit different. Some horses will be more symmetrical, other horses not so symmetrical. And there's also leg markings, the first of which would be a stocking, which is a white marking that extends to at least the bottom of their knee or their hock. Sometimes it'll extend higher, but when the markings extend higher, they're considered a paint horse of some sort. There's also a sock, which is a white marking on the leg that extends to the fetlock, but not as high as the knee or the hock, and sometimes they also call that a boot. And for basic colors, I am just going to give you a quick rundown of what the basic colors of horses are. There are chestnuts, which sometimes, depending on who you talk to, some people also call them sorrels, but genetically, there's no difference between the two of them. And so that is a horse that has a chestnut colored or brown body with a mane and tail that are about the same color as its body. Sometimes it will be a little bit lighter, but not a whole lot lighter. Then there are black horses, which is pretty self-explanatory. They're all black. There are bay horses, which are horses that have a brown body with a black mane and tail. There are Palomino horses, which usually have a golden of some tone body with a white or close to white mane and tail. There are buckskins, which are the same colored tan golden body as a Palomino, but they have a black mane and tail. There are roans, which are horses who have all of their hair is a mix of two different colors, and there's two variations of that. There are strawberry roans and there are blue roans. Strawberry roans, some people also call those chestnut roans because they have the same chestnut colored hair but mixed in with white as well, and that's their mix. The color of their hair is mixed throughout their entire body. For blue roans, some people also call them black roans, and they are same thing as the strawberry roan but with black hair, so it'll be black and white hair mixed throughout their entire body. There are grays, which most people, if you didn't know a whole lot about horses, you would call it a white horse, but we call them grays. And there's a couple variations of that as well. There are flea-bitten grays, which are horses with a white or gray-colored body. And they have a bunch of little tiny spots all over their entire body, which is why we call them flea-bitten grays, because they look like they've been bitten by a bunch of fleas. There are also dapple grays, which vary in the way they look as well. They'll have a white or gray body, which could be light gray or could be really dark gray, almost black. And they have large dapples, usually mostly on their hind end, but it could be on their whole body as well. And then there are paint horses, which a lot of people mistakenly call them painted horses as well, although I kind of like it. I think it's funny. And they can be all sorts of different colors. They could be a chestnut color. They could be brown with white spots on them. And they can be all different shapes and sizes. Not to be confused with the next one I was going to explain, which is an Appaloosa. And Appaloosas will have their solid body color, and then they have white spots, kind of like the dapples in the dapple gray, but they'll have white spots on top of the other color. So they'll have a lot of times also from their haunches moving forward, they'll have the most spots there, and then fewer as they go towards the shoulder and the neck. And next, I am going to get a little bit into color genetics, which is a little bit more complicated, but we'll go into it a little bit. So, selective horse breeding is the application of genetic principles to the betterment of an animal. And people do breed for color, but I don't want the two to be mistaken. There's a saying by Mark Rashid that I really like, and he said, "A good horse is never a bad color," which is kind of self-explanatory. And I also want to make known the difference between a couple different terms here. Breed, which is a group of horses with certain distinguishable characteristics. For example, there's thoroughbred horses that they use in horse racing. There's Clydesdale horses that you'll see on the Budweiser commercials. And between the two of those, there's definitely distinguishable characteristics, but and the color is the color of the horse, what you see. So that would be the difference between those two terms. So, to begin, when it comes to color genetics, there's two basic colors of horses at the very base, which is a chestnut or sorrel horse, which produces no black pigment in their hair, which is why they're caused to be a reddish copper color. And chestnuts come in all different sorts of shades. There's liver chestnuts, which look a little bit different than a standard chestnut. And then the second basic color would be black. And black horses produce both red pigment and black pigment in their hair. And one interesting thing is that genetically there is a difference between a black horse and a jet black horse. A black horse, if they're out in the sun in the summertime or whenever, their coat will fade and they'll turn a kind of brown reddish color, which it doesn't look quite as good. And there's also a jet black gene, which is a horse that will be extremely black all the time and their coat will never fade. And that is one thing when it comes to color genetics that is very sought out by different breeders, because it's you want it. If you show your horse, it'd be nice to have a horse that doesn't fade, because they just look so much better. And I'm going to talk about a couple of dilution genes, which is what causes a lot of the different colors of horses. So the different dilution genes are Cremello, Dun, Champagne, Silver, and Pearl. And the Cremello dilution, a horse that has one copy of the Cremello dilution, it could be a red or a black base, will be either a Palomino or a Buckskin, the black base being a Buckskin and the red base being a Palomino. And if a horse has two copies of the Cremello gene, the horse will either be a Cremello or a Perlino. And a Cremello is a sorrel that has two copies of the Cremello gene, and a Perlino is a bay that has two copies of the Cremello gene. And a Cremello on black is a single copy of the Cremello gene, and it doesn't show on black, which is kind of interesting. And for Dun, which is one of the other dilutions, Dun leaves what are called primitive markings on a horse's body, which would be a dorsal stripe, which is a stripe down their spine from the base of their neck to their tail. You can also see sometimes it's called mottling on their nose, which is little spots on their nose, as well as lacing, which you can see on the top of their butt and on the top of their back. And it's kind of the opposite spotting, like it's called lacing. And there is also, I don't know the technical name for it, to be honest, but zebra striping on their legs. And those would be the primitive markings that the Dun dilution leaves. And it could be a Dun on any color. So you could have a chestnut Dun or a buckskin Dun. And next is the Champagne dilution. And the Champagne dilution is interesting because it leaves horses with amber eyes and freckly noses. And if you look at most horses have brown eyes. There's some horses, like paint horses, that have blue eyes, which is also not very common. But amber eyes are really cool looking, and you really do not see them very often. And that's going to wrap it up for this segment. Next, we'll be coming back with a segment on training. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
young romantic monster of the big machine. He's got a problem with his poisons, but you know we'll find a cure. He's cleaning up his systems to keep his nature pure. Learning to match the beat of the old world man.
This is DJ Detour, and you are back on my second segment, which is training. So today in this segment, I'm going to talk about types of hay, feeding management, and some basic nutrients. So to start off, hay is a grass, legume, or herbaceous plant that is cut, dried, and stored as food for livestock. Hay is fed to animals mostly when there's not pasture to be able to graze on, pasture might be too rich for them, or a lot of times we have our horses in stables or barns and we feed them hay mostly twice a day. And there's a few different ways that hay is stored for sale. You can buy it loose in large round bales, which you might see a lot of times when you're driving on the freeway going wherever you're going, those really cool looking large round things out there, those are round hay bales. There's also large square bales and small square bales. Most of the time if you go to a feed store, you're going to find small square bales because that's what's used most commonly and widely. For people who use round bales, loose hay, or large square bales, you have to purchase those from a hay dealer, which is why usually most people end up getting the small square bales, because you don't get large portions. And inside of the bale, in small square bales, they're made up of flakes, which are sections of compressed hay that make it easy when you open the bale to separate out however many flakes you need to feed your horse or other animal. And I work at a feed store and we separate our bales out into flakes to sell them for people who have guinea pigs and rabbits. So funny story is that a lot of people, when they come in to get it, they're not sure what they're called. And I have heard so many funny names about what people call flakes of hay. I've heard flick, frake, flack, shake. Someone came in and asked if they could have a Timothy shake. My coworker bust up laughing. Slice, splice, slick, cut, bag, and my favorite one was biscuit. So all sorts of funny things that people mistake that word flake for. And when you're selecting hay for your horse, there's a lot of different things that you want to look at. You want to look and see if the leaves are attached to the stem or how many leaves are attached to the stem. Does it smell fresh or does it smell stale? Does it, if it's grass hay, does it have a vibrant green color? And then you want to look at and see if it's clean. Does it look like it has a lot of dirt and rocks in it or foreign objects? Because that happens sometimes. And you also want to look and see if there's a lot of brown in the hay, which right now there's a lot of brown in our brown stems in the hay because we haven't gotten a lot of rain. So things are drying out more. And all these sorts of things, they just happen sometimes, like finding foreign objects in your hay. It's a growing plant, and sometimes these weird things just happen, and we all have to remember that. So I'm going to talk to you about the different types of hay. First is alfalfa, which is a perennial flowering plant that's in the legume family. More specifically, it's in the pea family. And a lot of people use alfalfa for cattle because it is a very protein-rich hay. A lot of people often give it to horses as well. And the extra protein is really good for colder times of the year, for older horses or underweight horses, or horses that are doing a lot of work or showing. The big problem with alfalfa, though, is that horses need a 2-to-1 phosphorus to calcium ratio in their hay, and alfalfa has a 5-to-1 calcium to phosphorus ratio, so you have to really be careful if you choose to feed this to your horse. In addition to that, alfalfa can make horses hot, and in the horse world, that means hyper and crazy, so that's not always something we all want with our horses. Oat hay is a cereal grain hay that is grown in cool, wetter weather. It's mostly grown to harvest the oat seed, which is used in a lot of foods that we eat, oatmeal or granola, but it's also used for a lot of different types of livestock. Oat hay is very high in fiber, which makes it very easy for horses to digest. And there's a few different varieties of oat hay as well. There's red oat hay and white oat hay. Oat hay supplies horses with a substantial amount of energy. Oats are also fed to horses after they're harvested, whole, crimped, or rolled, and those are a good source of extra energy and calories. And next, there is wheat hay. Wheat is a cereal grain and is one of the top produced cereal grains in the world. This is another high fiber hay, which makes it, again, easier to digest, similar to the oat hay. Wheat is also made into bran, which is another feed that is typically given to horses to maintain healthy digestive systems. There is ryegrass hay, which is one of 9 in the tufted family of grass. Rye is characterized by bunch-like growth habits and is closely related to fescue grass. And ryegrass should not be confused with the crop rye. If you go have rye bread, it's a different crop. And fescue, which is related to the ryegrass, is another one of the 9 tufted grasses. Fescue is also used for ornamental and lawn grass, as well as pasture grass for livestock. One thing to be careful about when feeding fescue hay is that there is a symbiotic fungus that can grow on fescue grass and causes serious illness in horses as well as cattle. Although this is more of a problem that you're going to see on the East Coast because the conditions there are better for the fungus to grow. And I believe it was about a year ago that there was a really bad outbreak of someone selling a bunch of hay to a bunch of different feed stores in the East Coast, and a lot of horses got really sick. And I know from working in a feed store, a lot of people here were freaking out about, you know, worrying about if their horses were going to get sick. But luckily, the conditions here aren't quite right for the fungus to grow. And next, there is orchard grass, which is a perennial grass with a triangular flower head. And it's native to Europe, Asia, and Northern Africa. Grass hays are a good choice for horses, and I know my horse loves grass hay. And grass hay has the correct calcium to phosphorus ratio. They're not too high in protein, and they're also very low in dust and mold content. These qualities make it a really good choice for young all the way to old horses. And there is also Timothy grass, which is another perennial grass that's commonly known as meadow cattail or common cat's tail. And it was unintentionally introduced to Northern America and earned its name from a farmer named Timothy Hansen, who promoted the cultivation of Timothy grass in the early 1700s, which I thought was a very interesting fact. It's commonly fed to horses and cattle, as well as small animals like rabbits and guinea pigs, and is relatively high in fiber for a grass hay. And if it's cut later in the season, it's even higher in fiber. Then there is teff hay, which is an annual grass and is a species of love grass. And an interesting fact about teff is that the type of gluten that teff contains could be eaten by people who have celiac disease because or have a gluten restrictive diet, which I thought was very interesting. I didn't know that prior to doing some research. And as for horses, it's a good grass hay to feed and is often fed to horses that are insulin resistant. There's also three-way, which a lot of people feed, which is oat, wheat, and rye hay, which I had talked about earlier. And there are also hays called 90-10, 50-50, or 70-30. They could really be any percentage because these hays are a blend of orchard and alfalfa hay. The first number in the fraction represents the amount of orchard in the blend, and the second represents the amount of alfalfa in the blend. And these fractions are guesstimates. You know, if it's advertised as 90-10, it's not always going to be exactly 90% orchard and exactly 10% alfalfa. It's going to be somewhere in the range. It could look more like 80-20 or 70-30. But when farmers are assessing a whole field, it's hard to really account for, of course, every single bale. And the one issue with deciding to put your horse on one of these hays is that the alfalfa is a volunteer crop, which means that it randomly sprouts up in a field or orchard. A field of orchard. So it's not always regularly available. It's only available when it happens, which is... it's good when it happens, but if your horse is on it and you can't find any more of it, you're in big trouble. And that's going to wrap it up for now. We will come back in just a few minutes. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
I don't wanna shine the time just a little bit. Oh, baby, I can't respect wherever I go. Yeah, I all over the world. I demand respect. Yes, I do. It's an everyday thing. Say it is.
Coming back to my segment on training, we're going to talk about feeding management and some basic nutrients for horses. And remember, you're listening to Penguin Radio. So for feeding management, the first thing that you need to do is identify what class of horse that you have. Maintenance, growth, gestation, lactation, or work. And there's lots of in-betweens on that. Another, you also need to always provide free choice water. You need to feed hay at a bare minimum of twice a day, although ideally horses eat 18 to 20 hours out of the day. We only feed them twice a day because that's what works into our schedule, which seems a little selfish, but if we were feeding our horses 10 times a day, it's very time consuming. And we also, it's much better to have your horse out in a big pasture grazing, but that is not always readily available. And when you feed twice a day, you should feed at the same time each day. And if you can avoid feeding on the ground, you should do so. When horses eat on the ground, especially if they're in a sandy environment, it's a possibility that they could sand colic or get sick from other junk they eat on the ground. So it's best if you have some sort of feeder or clean platform that they can eat on, although you don't want them to be reaching upwards towards hay because that's an unnatural posture for them to eat in and it's easier for them to choke that way. You also want to make sure that you're not feeding them any finely ground materials. So if you have a bale of hay and there's some real fine, dusty stuff at the bottom, you don't want to feed them that. And generally speaking, when we are feeding horses hay, we feed them about 2 to 2.5% of the horse's body weight per day. And when you're that's when feeding a grass hay. When feeding a legume hay like alfalfa, because it's a lot richer in the content, you would only feed them 1.5 to 2% of the horse's body weight. You also want to avoid sudden changes in a horse's diet because they have bacteria in their hindgut, and when you change their diet really fast, you're going to kill the bacteria that helps digest their food, which is bad because the bacteria doesn't come back very quickly at all. So when you're changing your horse's diet, if it's a small change, you can use about a week's worth of time to change their diet. If it's a larger change, you should probably use about 2 weeks to change their diet to not harm their digestive system. And if you are feeding in a pasture setting where there's a bunch of horses out in a big pasture, you always want to, if you know, and if you observe a herd, and I talked about this a little bit on my show last week, there's going to be a horse that's at the top of the totem pole, the boss horse out in the pasture. And generally, if you can, you want to feed that horse first and then the rest of them. And when you are putting hay out in a pasture setting like that, you want to make more, you use different piles of hay, and you want to make more piles than the number of horses, so that if two of the piles are too close together, you don't want one horse to hog both of the, you don't want like the boss horse to hog both the two piles and then there's a horse that doesn't get to eat. And you also want to avoid feeding horses in corners. If your pasture has any areas where they could get cornered by another horse, that could also be potentially dangerous. All right. And now I'm going to talk about some basic nutrients. There are six basic nutrient classes, which are water, carbohydrates, protein, fats, minerals, and vitamins. And you really need to make sure that your horse is meeting all their requirements in these different categories to make sure you got a healthy animal. So for water, most horses consume 10 to 20 gallons of water per day, and 30 to 35 gallons if they're working that day. Water consumption can be affected by numerous things. Water temperature, water temperature should never be lower than 45 degrees, and the colder it is, the less your horse is really going to want to drink. A horse's physiological state could also affect the amount that they're going to drink. Their diet composition affects how much they're going to drink. If the horse is getting a wetter feed, they're going to obviously drink a little bit less. If they're getting a high protein or high salt feed, or they're getting that in their diet somehow, it's going to up water consumption. And hot weather will also increase water consumption up to 3 to 4 times more than normal, which is a lot of water. Water should be available free choice, and this is to minimize the risk of a bunch of things that could happen. If you don't have free choice water, it could lower the amount of food that your horse consumes. It could lower their activity, and it could also result in a compaction, which then if you catch it close enough, your horse will probably need surgery, and it's really bad. Another thing to consider is where you're getting the water. Flowing water is higher in bacteria. Pond water could have blue-green algae in it, which is not good for horses or anyone in that case. And well water could have high mineral content, pesticides, heavy metals, or salts. And next, carbohydrates. Glucose is the main source of most of a horse's energy. Next, fiber affects the absorption of other nutrients as well as their gut health. So that is another very important carbohydrate. For protein requirements change depending on the class of the horse. Young horses are going to need more protein than a mature horse who's not very active. And some signs of deficiency are weight loss, poor performance, or rougher coarse hair. Fats are usually 3 to 4% of a horse's natural diet. And we also, a lot of times, supplement our horse's fat. If you have a horse that's underweight, corn oil is the easiest, least expensive way to supplement your horse's weight. And you can give them up to 2 cups of oil in their food a day to help them gain weight. My first horse, when I got her, was disgustingly underweight. So I used corn oil with her for about 6 months before she was at the weight that I wanted her to be, but it helps get you there a lot faster. For minerals, the minerals that your horse could most likely be deficient in are calcium, phosphorus, sodium, chloride, and iodine. Trace minerals are also a vital part of minerals in a horse's diet, which a couple of those are included in trace minerals. And the easiest way to make sure that your horse is getting all their trace minerals and get that covered and off your mind are by getting a trace mineral block, which you can get at feed stores. And they have 4-pound blocks, which look like bricks, and they're red in color. And they also have 50-pound ones, which are huge squares. And you just put those out in your horse's pasture or in your horse's stall, depending on how you keep your horse. And they will lick them free choice, or some horses really like them. And I've seen horses chew them before, which is apparently they're really in need of some trace minerals. But that's an easy way to make sure that all your horse's minerals are covered. And for vitamins, some of the basic most important vitamins would be vitamin A. And there's a high amount of vitamin A that's found in most grass hays. Vitamin A is also added in almost every fortified feed, which would be fortified feeds are like pelleted hay products or a pelleted feed, which there's a whole bunch of different kinds, and I will talk about those on a later segment. But in fortified feeds, there is always vitamin A. Vitamin D, which you get from the sun and being out in the sunshine. So make sure if you have a horse that your horse is out in the sun and they'll get a good amount of vitamin D. Vitamin E is very important because it reduces the chance of tying up, which I'm going to talk about on my next segment, horse health. So it'll make a little more sense. And lastly, vitamin K, which is high in all hay feeds. So if your horse is getting any of those types of hay that I had talked about earlier, they are getting their amount of vitamin K in their feed. So on this segment, I talked about feeding management and some basic nutrients. You're listening to Penguin Radio, and we'll be right back in a minute.
We'll be right back.
This is DJ Detour back with my last segment, Horse Health. Today, I'm going to talk about some nutritionally related problems and diseases. And I am also going to discuss some plants that are poisonous to horses. So good things to know about. So for some nutritionally related problems and diseases, first problem you could have is weight loss. So two things that you would want to rule out first are disease and old age. And it's a common nutritional problem, inadequate feed. Your horse's teeth could be too long, so they wouldn't be able to be getting all the full nutrients in their food. Also, if they have parasites, ingest sand, have a problem with malabsorption, those all are things that could lead to weight loss in your horse. Another thing that happens commonly in horses is choking, which can be due to eating too fast, really finely ground food. Like I had talked about earlier, you don't want to feed your horse anything that's too fine. They can also choke if they have a feed that's too dry. Grass clippings. Some people think they're doing you a favor if they throw your horse some grass clippings, but really, it happens a lot that horses choke on grass clippings. Also, there's a feed, which is beet pulp, which is often fed to horses. And when you're feeding beet pulp, you need to soak it before you feed it. And if it is not soaked enough, your horse is going to choke on it. Also, depending on your horse, some horses eat faster than others. If you have an apple, horses can choke on apples, which sounds really funny. And everyone thinks, you know, I'm going to go give that horse an apple. And I had a friend of mine who someone thought they were doing something nice by, you know, reaching over the fence and giving their horse an apple. They were walking by the woman's property, and her horse choked on the apple, and it cost her a big vet bill, and she was very unhappy about it. So if anyone's reaching over any fences and giving random horses apples and you don't know how fast they eat, I would recommend chopping up the apple because it could harm the horse. Another thing that is common is colic. And there's a lot of different things or different types of colic. There's sand colic, gas colic, and if your horse needs surgery, if your horse gets colic, it is very expensive. I think probably the least expensive colic surgery is going to be about $8,000. And there's a lot of things that you can do to avoid that from happening. And some of the symptoms of colic are severe pain in their abdomen, uneasiness. They look at their flanks a lot. They'll turn around and look at themselves, which is unusual. Laying down and getting up a lot. They will kick and bite at their stomach, sweat a lot, bloat. They'll lay down and roll on their back and thrash. And they're going to have an increased pulse and an increased respiration rate. And some of the things that you can do to prevent colic would be follow a deworming program. So, well, I should talk about first some of the risks of colic, some of the things that can go into it, which would be stuff like parasites, nutrition, a horse's teeth and if they're well taken care of, how much water they are or are not drinking. Their age can play somewhat of a factor into it. Exercise, weather, infections, and there's even more than that, but that's what I can think of off the top of my head. So to prevent it, following a deworming program will reduce the chance of your horse having parasites. It's also better to feed in smaller portions throughout the day instead of larger portions, because then it's easier for them to digest and there's no impaction that could happen, which would be one of the causes of colic. And you should follow a regular, at the same time each day, feeding schedule. Have free choice water. And you should check their teeth. Probably, you know, whenever your vet is out there, have them look in their mouth real quick. It doesn't take too long. All right. And tying up is another thing that could happen. And that is if a horse has too many carbohydrates or fails to warm up. It could also be caused by electrolyte imbalances or a vitamin E deficiency or a selenium deficiency. And some of the symptoms of that are muscle stiffness, paralysis, tremors, anxiety, and dark urine. So next, I'm going to talk about some plants that could be very harmful to your horse. The first one I'm going to talk about is black walnut. The most common contact is through through shavings, like the bark, the hull of the nut, or wood. And the symptoms that your horse has been in contact with black walnut would be difficult respiration, laminitis, or colic. Next, there is cherry or plum. Seeds, leaves, bark, fruits, and pits are all dangerous to horses. The cyanide in them binds with oxygen and will increase respiration rate, increase the pulse, and also can result in death. Avocados are also can result in death in horses. The toxin that is in the plant is not in the flesh of a ripe fruit, but the flesh of a fruit that is not ripe. And symptoms that your horse could have eaten this would be heart failure, diarrhea, or death, which is also, you know, an avocado is not worth our horse dying. Another thing that can happen is ivy or creeping Charlie, which can be it can sometimes happen that it gets accidentally baled into hay, and this can cause them frothing at the mouth, sweating, well, extreme sweating, and difficult breathing. Oleander is also a very deadly thing to horses, and it's lethal to horses in small doses, and is usually fatal between 8 to 24 hours. Red maple is not good for horses. It can result in depression, anemia, and there is no antidote to if your horse eats red maple. And it, one of the things that it does is it breaks down a horse's red blood cells. Another plant would be the yew tree. And the yew tree is known for, you could find a horse that has died from ingesting a part of a yew tree, and the leaf or whatever they got will still be in their mouth when they die, which is scary. So you definitely don't want to have any of that anywhere near where you have your horse. And the reason that this happens is it's a cardiac depressant. And next is yellow star thistle. Is typically to horses, they don't like the taste of it, but they can create a taste for it. They can like it. It's possible. And they have to consume a very large quantity of this to die. But what happens after they start eating it, any of the effects are irreversible. And they call it, sometimes they call it chewing disease, because your horse, it messes up their brain. It turns their brain into mush. They'll start, they'll yawn a lot. They'll also do what's called head pressing, which is they'll literally, whatever it is, if it's a tree or a pole, they'll press their head on it, which is very weird to watch. And they also have a lot of difficulty eating and drinking, and they also have a very blank expression on their face. Lupine is also another toxic plant to horses. And younger lupine plants are more toxic than older lupine plants. The things that some of the symptoms that you'd see if your horse has ingested lupine would be diarrhea, a loss of coordination, convulsion, and possibly death. And lastly, prevention for all these things is the key. If you know the plants that horses are not supposed to eat or not supposed to be around, you're going to solve your problem before it happens. So it's very important to manage your pasture, make sure that none of this stuff is out there, as well as anything else that could be in their pasture. You want to make sure that your horse gets good food, a steady amount of water. Another way you can make sure that none of this happens is buy local hay and know where your hay comes from. And when your horse needs any type of supplemental feed, if they're underweight or whatever, make sure you give that to them. And this is going to wrap up my show for today. You can tune in next week on Wednesday from 3 to 4 for my show Behind the Bit at radio.dominican.edu.
I shed my skin and put my bones into everything I record to it. And yeah, I'm on. Let that stage light go and shine on down. Got that Bob Barker suit game and Plinko in my style. Money, stay on my craft and stick around for those pounds. But I do that to pass the torch and put on for my town. Trust me, on my INDEPENDENT shit hustling. Chasing dreams since I was 14 with the 4-track busting. Halfway across that city with the backpack.